reading from the book of Mark, verses 9 to 23. Then he called the crowd again and said to them, "Listen to me, all of you, and understand. There's nothing outside a person that by going in can defile, but the things that come out are what defile." When he had left the crowd and entered the house, his disciples asked him about the parable. He said to them, "Then do you also fail to understand? Do you not see that whatever goes into a person from outside cannot defile, since it enters not the heart but the stomach and goes out into the sewer?" Thus he declared all foods clean. And he said, "It is what comes out of a person that defiles, for it is from within, from the human heart, that evil intentions come. Fornication, theft, murder, adultery, avarice, wickedness, deceit, licentiousness, envy, slander, pride, folly. All these evil things come from within, and they defile a person." This is the word of the Lord.
Well, good evening, and I am Greg. I'm the interim pastor here, in case you're new here, and I haven't spoken for a little while, so it's nice to be up here again. You'll be the judge of whether that's good for you. But anyways, tonight, I want to begin just by talking a little bit about Lent, and we've already heard something of that. And I just want to remind you, I like that Lent cheat sheet, those little pink sheets or whatever color they were. But that's good. There's a lot of helpful information on there. I'm not going to say a whole bunch more about Lent aside from that. But I do encourage you, if you haven't taken a part in some Lenten practice, to do that. There's a lot of, it's very valuable. It's a wonderful way to deepen in our relationship with the Lord. So the church year, of course, begins in Advent. And I'll see if I get this thing. There we go. The church year begins in Advent. And that was, of course, beginning of December. And in Advent, we contemplate, we celebrate, we wait for this time for the coming of Jesus. And this coming of the God that is beyond our imagination, the God that created the galaxies and the universe and that has all secrets of knowledge. And it's just immense. And to contemplate that God would become a human, that God would become a baby in a womb, that God would grow up as a vulnerable baby, is really beyond our imagination. We struggle to understand that, to think about it. But then, as we enter Lent, we have another struggle. And I would say, as much as Advent is about that, we struggle with, wow, that is just unthinkable and unimaginable that God could somehow come down and become a human in Jesus Christ. In Lent, we contemplate again and we wait for this last week of Jesus, this Passion Week before his death and his resurrection. And it's that same type of waiting and looking forward to. But in this time, it is a time, I would say, that is incomprehensible. If it's difficult to imagine that God would come and be a human, it's incomprehensible to me that God would die at our hands. And this is part of what Lent is about, is entering into that, wow, understanding, beginning to understand a little bit more of the incomprehensible act of God. We have to ask ourselves, why would God choose to do that? Why would God in Jesus choose to die a gruesome death? Why would Jesus choose to suffer injustice? The very God, the maker of the people who delve out injustice, Jesus chooses to succumb, to subject himself to public ridicule. The God of the universe, now in this man who's lived here 30 years, chooses to be the subject of rejection and judgment, even by us. To be abandoned by his friends. To be beaten physically. and ultimately crucified. How can we comprehend that? And we have to again ask the question, why? Why would God do this? So, during Lent, we do rightly consider and what Jesus went through. And some of the practices of Lent are about getting into, kind of going in step a little bit with what Jesus did. Maybe we give up something to somehow identify and with what Jesus gave up. We might suffer just a teensy bit just in anticipation or in some way of identification with what Jesus did. But we still ask the question, why? And the answer to that question is in a very simple answer, but it's a very profound answer. And that is, he did it out of love. Lent, and especially Lent for this year, is about the extravagant love of God. The extravagant love of God. I say extravagant because it's a costly love. It's a costly love, and it's a sacrificial love. It's a generous love. Now, I don't know, I was thinking about this. I was imagining, what if I were to drive down the freeway with the windows open, and I were to put in the back seat tons of money, my life savings, and I were to just put, and I had it in envelopes so it wouldn't look like life savings necessarily, and I would just drive down the freeway throwing it out the windows in the hopes that a few people might find one of those envelopes and open it up and receive the money. Right? But what about, maybe we could imagine something like that. Take what's most valuable to us. Maybe we're a writer and we love to write books, or we're an artist and we have great art. We've collected all this art over the years, or whatever it may be. And we drive down the road and we just throw it out the windows. Because in a way, that's what Jesus' coming is like for us. For most people, it will be wasted. Most people will not hear. Most people will not receive what Christ has done. It is a generous love, beyond our imagination, a generous love, and it is a costly love. And so, this is the extravagant love that I'm inviting us to consider this Lenten season. Suffering, but on the other side of that, the reason why is out of God's extravagant love for us. Now, that theme, of course, derives from Scripture, and we read that Jesus said, I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. And later he says, I lay down my life in order to take it up again. No one takes it from me, but I lay it down of my own accord. I have power to lay it down, and I have power to take it up again. You know, this is a different type of sacrifice. This is a sacrifice where Jesus is in control, and he chooses. And in that type of choosing is all the more sacrificial, that he's really choosing to lay down his life for us. In John 15:13, we read, no one has greater love than this, to lay down one's life for one's friends. Extravagant love. That is what we want to think about this Lenten season. Now, as we get into our text tonight, I think it's helpful to look to what precedes what was previously read, and that is that we find in verses 1-7. We're not going to do the whole part. I mean, it's kind of a strange scripture passage for Lent, I think. Doesn't it sound a little strange? But let's get into this. So it says, when the Pharisees and some of the scribes who had come from Jerusalem gathered around Jesus, they noticed that some of his disciples were eating with defiled hands, that is, without washing them. For the Pharisees and all the Jews did not eat unless they thoroughly washed their hands, thus observing the tradition of the elders. And they do not eat anything from the market unless they wash it. And there are also many other traditions that they observe, the washing of cups and pots and bronze kettles. So the Pharisees and the scribes asked him, why do your disciples not live according to the tradition of the elders, but eat with defiled hands? Jesus said to them, Isaiah prophesied rightly about you hypocrites. as it is written. This people honors me with their lips, but their hearts are far from me. In vain do they worship me, teaching human precepts as doctrines. Whew. You talk about a slammer. Well, this is definitely a confrontation here. Now, in this confrontation, the Pharisees come, and they're likely coming the second time to question Jesus. They've come from Jerusalem. And the Pharisees are, there. Maybe they hold some power, but they're really the religious leaders, right? They're the people that run the church of that day, so to speak. And in some ways, they had a lot of good intentions, a lot of great things about them. They get a bad rap, but there's a lot of sides to the Pharisees, and there are a lot of different types of Pharisees. So they developed this very practical system for people to be able to be right with God and be holy, to be set apart, to be distinct from other peoples and other groups and other nations, to be the ones that represented God. So they developed these lots of rules for people to do. And these rules were practical. And you know, I think we kind of like rules, right? Most of us like to know how to do things. So in some sense, these Pharisees were doing a lot of potentially intentional good. Rules to live by. Rules to please God by. Rules to be a good community by. Along comes Jesus. And Jesus is part of the system. He's part of the system because he's a teacher. He's known as a rabbi. He's Jewish. He's part of their system. But he's not observing the rules. He's breaking lots of rules. And so the Pharisees come to confront him. Now, Jesus is wise to this, and he knows that what they are doing is, well, it's not just a simple question. It's really a power confrontation. They're going to put Jesus down in this situation. Because Jesus is a public ministry, and he's obviously in a crowd here. He's a public teacher. His reputation is very important. And these Pharisees come and they say, so how come your followers aren't doing what everybody knows is the right thing to do? What everybody does, how come they're not doing that? How come they are becoming defiled and defiling others? Because, hey, if I was defiled and I touched somebody else, There's a lot of association of defilement. Defilement is kind of a thing of association. So why are they not doing that? What could Jesus possibly answer? I just said, you don't have to. It's not that big a deal. Those would all make Jesus look really bad. And they probably thought that's his only answer. But instead, he knows what's happening. And so he turns the tables. And we have these strong words from Jesus. So, Jesus, in fact, uses this opportunity to actually accuse them. It's a setup. Turn the opposite direction. So, their actions, Jesus says, reveal their heart. Their actions reveal their heart. And this is essentially, Jesus is pointing out to them, this is really all a matter of the heart. It's what comes out, not what goes in, that matters. And look inside. Look at what comes out. It's not good stuff. So, you know, when I think about the Pharisees, I think about myself. It's easy for me to be focused on the outside. And maybe it is for you too. I can be really annoying to live with, right? You ask my family, right? In the kitchen. It's like Christy cooks a certain way. she takes the spoons and stuff, she puts them on the counter. And I'm always like, well, honey, you could just put something underneath that and then you wouldn't get the counter dirty, right? And she's probably heard that from me like 1,000 times. And she still does it her way. And I still say that. Right? Rules for living, right? By Greg. You wouldn't want to drive with me either, right? I've got a certain way to drive. I'm annoying, right? I think I'm being helpful, but really, in the long run, maybe I am to a certain degree, but I'm not. My focus is outward on the things that really don't matter so much. And the problem is that when I do that, I divert focus from the inward. And that's where Jesus is getting at here. He's saying, look at the inside. It's easy for us to look at the outside and see what others have done wrong and what I've done wrong, and even in our own selves. He says, look at the inside. It's an indictment where Jesus says, it is a matter of the heart. And first of all, the problem is internal. You know, we were talking, I won't say with whom, but we were talking last week, and a parent, and they were saying, wow, I don't know where this stuff is coming from in our child. And I said, oh, really? Okay. How long have you been a Christian? Okay. Wow, what kind of... They didn't get that from us. I don't think they got that from school. Where is that coming from? It's coming from the heart. Our programming is bad. It's called original sin. The code, there's a virus. There's something going on. And it starts to generate bad stuff. And it's in every one of us. Maybe we can draw some comfort from the fact that we share that in common. That we can maybe encourage one another, even in knowing that we have the virus. We have the bad stuff being generated in our hearts. It's not that one or another is worse. It's that we've got a common problem. The problem is internal. Secondly, Jesus says, the symptoms are many. The symptoms are many. So, I want to read back just a little bit of what Jesus says in chapter 7, verses 22 and 23. Verse 21, actually, it says, from within, from the human heart, that evil intentions come. Fornication, theft, murder. Fornication, all things sensual and sexual. Theft, wanting things that don't belong to us. All different types of theft. We steal ideas. We steal thoughts. We steal, hey, somebody else came up with that, but I can say it and I look better. Murder, thoughts of hate, adultery, avarice, greed. Greed is rampant in our society, wanting too much, more than we really need. Wickedness. And then it gets even deeper, the things that are harder to distinguish, that aren't so much on the outside. Deceit, the little things that we fudge on all the time. Licentiousness, which is the lack of self-control, the lack of self-denial. Man, that's a tough one. Envy, comparing, looking at what other people have and wanting that. Slander, it's easy to get in just a slightly slanted word about somebody or people group or place or experience. Pride, how much we struggle with pride. Folly, foolishness, just stupidity, but also rashness. And doing things that really are not of God's wisdom, but are of the world's wisdom. Wow. The symptoms are many. And it's not a good place. If all of this sounds very familiar, it no doubt was to the disciples too, as Jesus pulled them together. Because he said on the Sermon on the Mount, you have heard that it was said to those of ancient times, you shall not murder, and whoever murders shall be liable to judgment. But I say to you, that if you are angry with a brother or sister, you will be liable to judgment. And if you insult a brother or sister, you will be liable to the council. And if you say you fool, you will be liable to the hell of fire. And then he went on to say in verse 27 of chapter 5 in Matthew that you have heard that it was said, you shall not commit adultery. But I say to you that everyone who looks at a woman with lust, and I assume it goes for women the other way around, but everyone who looks at a woman with lust has already committed adultery with her in his heart. It's heavy stuff. When I hear that, and our passage ends there, Jesus doesn't offer a whole bunch of solutions to it. The solutions are going to come later. But even now, as I consider that, even as a Christian, I think, wow, what am I going to do with that? What are we going to do with that? This is from the Ash Wednesday confession that we read earlier during prayers of the people. But I just want to run through a few of them. We have sinned by our own fault in thought, word, and deed, by what we have done and by what we have left undone. It's so easy. It would be easy to just, maybe the only thing we could do with all this is go, hey, I'm going to go live in a cave. I'm just not going to do bad things. I'll make sure there's no people around me, so I won't be able to do bad. And yet this says we will be doing bad because we will be leaving all kinds of good undone. Wow. We have not loved with our whole heart and mind and strength. We have not loved our neighbors as ourselves. We have not forgiven others as we have been forgiven. We have been deaf to your call to serve as Christ served us. We have not been true to the mind of Christ. Our self-indulgent appetites and ways and our exploitation of other people are in need of confession. Our anger at our own frustration, our intemperate love of worldly goods and comforts, and our dishonesty in daily life and work. Oh, it's so nice to think that we're honest. It's so nice that we have to think that we have integrity, but in actuality, we fudge all the time. Little things. Maybe even we don't make a full stop at the stop sign. For the wrongs we have done, for our blindness to human need and suffering, it's easy to drive by and not stop and help somebody. For our indifference to injustice and cruelty, for our false judgments, for uncharitable thoughts toward our neighbors, and for our prejudice and contempt toward those who differ from us, for our waste and pollution. We could go on and on, and we would not be very happy. It's depressing. But all this depression points to the solution. As we sit here and we think, what could we do? I think to myself, well, maybe I could try some things, try some guidelines to try to live better. And when I think about that, I think about a store in our neighborhood. Now, I live an hour from here, right, and live up kind of in a very ecologically conscious area. Organic food is grown. A lot of it's brought here to Berkeley. People are very conscious about what they eat and the importance of it. And that's good. That's all very good. But with that, sometimes with that mentality comes a lot of legalism about I can only eat this and this and it has to be from there and on and on and on it goes. And there's a store up there that I sometimes go to. And I have to tell you, it's one of the most unpleasant places to be. People there seem to be so grumpy and unhappy because they're trying so hard and there's so many little rules to do and so many little laws and it's so easy to mess up. Right? That's not the solution. It's not the solution. I could just maybe try to stop having bad thoughts. I don't know if you've ever tried that. Doesn't work. It leads to all of this leads to a certain depression. And I think Jesus wants us to come there. And I believe we need to come there during Lent. We need to come to that mirror, to look in that mirror and say, it is all lost. The plight of humanity is all lost. No program, no political program, nothing we do, nothing that we're involved in is going to solve the problem that is within us and is in with every person. We need to come face to face with that mirror. And that's what Jesus is bringing to us, I believe, this evening. The good news is that that is not the end of the story. It's only the beginning of a new chapter. We find ourselves in the middle of Mark, and the chapter literally turns, and Jesus is on his way, slowly, step by step, to Jerusalem, to solving our problem. Not his problem, solving our problem. The march to Jerusalem is beginning. The march to the cross is beginning. It points to the only solution. A supernatural, spiritual sacrifice is needed. A supernatural sacrifice. Only God can pay for our inner condition. Only the one who is perfect, who has the perfect heart, who has a gracious heart, a merciful heart, a generous heart, a loving heart, a pure heart, can pay for our ugly hearts. And Jesus will choose to do it. This is what I invite us to celebrate. The extravagant love of God this Lenten season. If you'd like to get out your connection cards, it's clear that our hearts are sick. And it is true that we really can't do much about it without help. We can't do anything about it, really, without help. But thanks be to God, God's heart is not like ours. God is a God of extravagant, self-giving, self-sacrificing love. And it is upon this God of extravagant love that we will dwell upon during this Lenten season. So, for next steps, the first one is perhaps you'd like to commit to draw near to God. I know it's worded slightly different on your card here, but it's okay. Perhaps you'd like to commit to draw near to God by fasting or giving. Maybe not doing something or deciding instead to do something. You could give up something. We could give up something like Facebook or meat or TV or I don't know what, chocolate. It's a minor thing sometimes, but it's an important reminder. Or we choose to do something. Maybe it's to pray more, to love more. Maybe there's somebody in our neighborhood and we've decided, you know what, I'm going to go by every week or every day and just say hello. I'm going to go through my neighborhood and do this or that. It can be something we do. Secondly, a next step could be, this week I will reflect on the unclean stuff in my heart with which I continue to struggle. You know, this is the thing, is that we don't arrive. We may get further along, but it's usually an up and down trip with God. And so we're always struggling, and we're always in need of the grace of Jesus. And sometimes it's good just to name it, to write something down and say, Jesus, I would really love to see you heal me in this area. So I encourage you to think about it and to pray and seek God in it and maybe write something down and experience his grace in it. And thirdly, this week, I will thank God daily for his sacrificial love, for his forgiveness, and for his restoration. Give thanks that God didn't abandon us to judgment, but chose to take that judgment himself, to pay the price because he loves us. Give thanks because through what Jesus began, we can be forgiven. We can start over every day, every hour. And give thanks because our relationship with ourselves, with others, and with God is being restored. Would you pray with me? Lord Jesus, we thank you. We are full of gratitude because you truly are a Savior. You are solving a problem for us that we can't begin to solve, that no how-to book could ever complete. God, tonight we just ask that you would touch us in a special way, that we would know both out of your love the ability to look at what's dark, and on the other hand to reach out towards you and your grace and your love and your forgiveness. And we ask this, Jesus, in